This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Today I'm with Dr. Rainer Beck from the Max Planck Institute in Bonn. Hi, Rainer.
Hi.
Thanks for being with us today. So you recently gave a talk in Manchester about your area of specialisation, which is basically cosmic magnetic fields, so magnetic fields in the universe and particularly in galaxies. Could you maybe start off by giving us an overview of what kinds of magnetic fields we find in space and why it's globally, why it's interesting to study them?
Oh, that's already a difficult question. So, as probably everybody knows, is magnetism is one of the fundamental forces in the universe. So, it should be there everywhere, but the cosmic magnetic fields are very hard to observe. So, we believe that they are probably also existing everywhere in all cosmic objects, and even there where we don't see anything, could be still there. The point is that magnetic fields don't radiate by themselves, so they are just accepting forces. So they are over spanning regions within the space, but to see them, particles have to enter the magnetic fields, and these are electrically charged particles, and only then we can observe them. That is why observations are important, to show what role magnetic fields play in processes in astrophysics. So we know that they are important on the sun, so solar activity is connected to magnetic fields. We know that they're important also around planets. We know that the Earth magnetic field is important just to keep off charged particles coming from the solar wind. So that is very important just to allow life to develop on Earth. It has been important. And if the magnetic field of the Earth disappears, it is very harmful to life on Earth. And we believe that maybe some of the big catastrophes could be related to the disappearance of magnetic field over some limited time. But if we go further out to stars, then we know a bit that many stars have strong magnetic fields, but we cannot look into stars. We just can look at the surfaces. We don't know how strong magnetic fields are within the stars. We do not know what role magnetic fields play if a star is formed. We do not know what happens to the fields if the star explodes. We do know very little about what happens to magnetic fields between the stars in the so-called interstellar space. If we go even out of the Milky Way and out of galaxies, our knowledge is practically zero. Some people believe that magnetic fields already existed in the very early universe. There are many processes that can produce magnetic fields. Do they still survive until today? Or did they disappear? Are they thrown out of stars, of galaxies? These are all questions we just started to work on.
We are at the very beginning of our knowledge of magnetism in space, but we do know some things. So, for one, we have discovered that galaxies, spiral galaxies in particular, possess their own magnetic field, and we can detect that. So could you maybe explain how you'd go about detecting a magnetic field in such a galaxy, and what kind of properties that those fields have?
Basically, there are several methods to look for magnetic fields in spiral galaxies. So one is using optical polarization. That has been done in the past, but it turned out to be quite difficult, because polarization can be produced by magnetic fields. In detail, these are dust grains which are aligned in magnetic fields, and they cause deflections and extinction of light in along one orientation, so that the other orientation perpendicular to that is left over. That causes polarization, but unfortunately, optical polarization can only be caused by scattering, without any magnetic fields being involved. And that makes things very complicated, and that's why only very few people are working on optical polarization. Then there is a so-called Zeeman effect, which is the splitting of spectral lines in a strong magnetic fields, but you need really strong magnetic fields for that, and you also need strong spectral lines, and that can be applied only for very dense molecular clouds and hydrogen clouds that cannot be applied to very distant objects. So that is restricted to a few objects. And that's why most people now work on a so-called synchrotron emission. Synchrotron emission comes from charged particles entering magnetic fields, and they produce highly polarized radio emission. So the big advantage is we can use the existing big radio telescopes. Synchrotron emission is very strong. It is hardly mixed with some other emission components, so you can be rather sure that this is magnetically driven radiation, and the degree of polarization is very high. Optical polarization is only a few percent at maximum, whereas synchrotron polarization can theoretically be up to 75%. In practice, we observe degrees of polarization of up to 50%, which is really unexpectedly high. So that is the big discovery from last century, end of last century, that galaxies have strongly polarized synchrotron signals, and that needed special backends of the receivers, so special equipment. In the beginning, people did not look for that because they did not expect that. But mm-hmm. then they looked in detail and found, oh, surprised, the emission is really highly polarized. And this is really unexpected, because people thought that magnetic fields are quite turbulent, because star formation is producing turbulence, but fortunately there is a process that's called the dynamo, which can produce order out of the turbulence, order out of chaos, and this is well known. Dynamos are well known in all technical applications. We can also make experiments with dynamos in the lab, so we know that dynamos can produce ordered magnetic field also out of turbulent motions, and that is also what happens in galaxies. So there are huge, large-scale dynamos. They use the energy of the general rotation of galaxies. They use existing magnetic fields, and they make use of turbulent gas motions, and they can produce such large-scale fields that we observe. It takes time. It takes maybe several hundred million years, even billion years, but it seems to work.
Okay, so to recap a little bit, effectively we observe highly polarized radio waves, effectively, from galaxies. So just a reminder for listeners, when we talk about polarized light, at any wavelength, it's light that propagates with a certain preferred orientation, basically. And so you can use specific equipment on telescopes, radio telescopes, to detect that kind of light. And this polarized light is coming from electrons, which are moving around in a magnetic field, which itself is generated in a galaxy through this sort of a regular field, which is to say a field that has all of its field lines lined up with each other. And that's generated via this so-called dynamo mechanism, which basically winds up the field lines so that they all kind of line up with each other. Am I correct in sort of summing it up that way?
That's a perfect summary. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Great.
I could not have done better. Thank you.
Fantastic. So a magnetic field's found in all of the spiral galaxies that we've seen so far. What kind of distribution do we know of?
So they have been found in all spiral galaxies, and not only in spiral galaxies. There are irregular galaxies, dwarf galaxies, and as long as there is star formation, we also find magnetic fields. So this is a general law. And the reason for that is that the dynamo needs energy, the dynamo needs turbulence, and both energy and turbulence is generated by star formation. That may sound quite abstract, but that just means that the energy is somehow related to what happens to stars. So it could be stellar winds, it could be supernova remnants, it could be all sorts of outflows from stars. So stars are very energetic objects in galaxies, and at the end of their lives, or already during their lives, they can release some of their energy to the interstellar space, and that could causes turbulence, and that is one of the main ingredients of dynamo action. So if there's no more star formation, then magnetic fields, which are there, they are still can survive for some time until they diffuse out, but there cannot be a new generation of magnetic fields produced anymore. So this is the general idea. So they may diffuse out into interstellar space, but they will become weaker and weaker. Mm-hmm. They will not disappear completely. So this is one of the main differences between magnetic fields and electric fields. You can destroy electric fields by moving charges around, but magnetic fields cannot be destroyed by charges because there are no magnetic charges. So this is very amazing. So the so-called magnetic monopoles, they apparently do not exist. Mm-hmm. We have no idea why, but this is a big mystery. So magnetic fields are very hard to destroy. They are so-called recombination of magnetic fields, reconnection of magnetic fields, like shortcuts, but they are quite rare. And so magnetic fields can live for billions of years.
So this is what we suspect is the case in something like an elliptical galaxy, where the star formation rate has gone massively down, and so the fields, magnetic fields, may still be there, but they're just not illuminated anymore by charged particles.
So we detect any radiation from such regions, but there are prospects to detect them indirectly. So the idea is that if you have a source of polarized emission behind these objects, that could be anywhere behind, could be very distant, so-called quasars. If they are polarized, and many of them are polarized, then if this polarized radio emission is passing through a foreground magnetic field, for instance, in an elliptical galaxy, then this polarized emission is rotated. And normally, this rotation cannot occur in the quasars themselves, but they are supposed to occur in a foreground object. Mm-hmm. So that is an indirect way to measure magnetic fields in the foreground. The problem only is that the present radio telescopes are not sensitive enough to do that.
I see. One more question before we move on to sort of the future possibilities of something you've just hinted at. But when you have something like a large-scale magnetic field, or indeed just a turbulent magnetic field, so obviously that is affected by the turbulence of the gas in the galaxy. How does the field itself then act back upon the galaxy, as it were? Like, is there a reverse effect where the field has an effect on gas motions or things like that in the galaxy?
No, but certainly it will have, because if we measure the energies of magnetic fields and compare that with the energies of the gas motion and energies of other constituents like cosmic rays, we find that they are all equivalent. That means there's a frequent interplay between these different components, and that means there's back and forth reactions. So first, the gas produces, amplifies magnetic fields, and then certainly if the magnetic field reaches a certain level of strength, then it will back react on the gas flow. So the gas flows will also be affected, as long as the gas flows are ionized. If there's neutral gas, then it will not be affected, but most of the gas in the galaxies and interstellar space is ionized, so there will be a back reaction. But that is widely not investigated. So this is still something which needs to be done.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, it's not quite a running joke, but it's always that question at any sort of dynamics seminar. And have you considered the impact of magnetic fields? And everyone sort of laughs a little bit and then looks a bit sheepish, don't they?
Oh, it's not true anymore. I think now the present day computers are fast enough, so it's not an excuse anymore not to implement magnetic fields. If people don't do that, then they just do a mistake. I think they are just, they are in the early process of the model. So everybody now agrees that without magnetic fields, you cannot have any realistic model of anything in the universe.
That's
what most people now realize, and that's why more and more models are including magnetic fields. But that's the previous question. So how the back reaction runs, this is not yet done, because it's not only sufficient to include magnetic fields, you have to have a very high numerical resolution. So you need big computers to run that, and you need to follow them over a long time. So this is enormous amount of computing time.
Sure.
So that is on the way, but we still have to wait for a few more years until we understand better how, at least in the computer, things run. And then the next point would be to test that with observations. So that is will take even longer, I think.
One of the very exciting things in terms of magnetism observations is the next generation of telescopes that are coming online and that will start to have the sensitivity needed to really probe magnetic fields in great detail. So you mentioned with looking at background sources of elliptical galaxies, polarized background sources, to be able to maybe derive the magnetic field. And that's going to be possible with things like the SKA, which we've talked a lot about on the Jodcast. But so one of the main goals of the SKA is magnetism. So how does having something like the SKA improve our capability to detect magnetic fields?
So first is we will get resolution. So in principle, we can also have high resolution with present-day radio telescopes, but resolution for extended objects has a big disadvantage. You just lose radio photons. Mm. If you have high resolution, then the number of photons goes down dramatically, and that means with present-day telescopes, the resolution is limited. So you need both resolution and sensitivity, and that means you need just mere collecting area. So the collecting area of the telescope has to be huge, and this is why the square kilometer ray, that's what the name says, has an enormous collecting area. Whether it will be a really square kilometer, we still don't know yet, but it will be approximately of the order of the square kilometer. And that means we have enormous amount of radio photons, and that allows us to reduce the beam size to make the resolution better and better, so we can really look at details in the interstellar space. We can really look how magnetism acts, so how magnetism is changing the gas flows, how the magnetic fields are expelled from supernova remnants, so we can really watch the action of magnetic fields in the interstellar space, in our Milky Way, and even in external galaxies. So this is one of the big dreams, that we can really look at them. So like we look at the magnetic fields on the sun, so they are enormously, they're excellent satellites who give us X-ray pictures and UV pictures of the solar activity, which is all magnetic, so you can really watch magnetic fields in action. You can see prominences, eruptions, you can see all these fascinating things. Okay, the time scales in galaxies will be much longer, so we cannot watch them developing, but we will see magnetic fields really, how they are loops, whether they are arcs, whether they are helically twisted, all that is probably visible with the SKA and nearby galaxies. But then the main question is, if we go back in time, when did magnetic fields appear in the universe? Mm-hmm. And that is something only the SKA will be able to do. If we're looking back in time, means we are looking back also in the evolution of magnetic fields, and then the question is, when did they come into scene? So when are the first turbulent fields come? When are the first regular fields come? And there are clear predictions from dynamo theory, and we have to test them. And history of science tells us that expectations are never fulfilled, so we will certainly find a major difference, or maybe we will realize that our models are completely wrong. So let's see. And then the interesting part of science starts. We have to revise our models and then rethink everything completely from scratch.
But that's, as you say, that's the interesting bit. That's the fun bit. Brilliant. Thanks a lot for telling us about all these magnetic fields. And it does seem that there is a very bright future for them in the coming years. So thanks again.
That's true. Thank you.
Thank you.